You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks on the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced them I had to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on his typhus knee, and he was talking to Moccasin Joe. Where the party they gonna have? Out in the St. John's swamps. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Viscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Viscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, happy Halloween, everybody. And, again, Tom is not with us. He's not sick anymore. He recovered. I'm recovered as well. But he's way behind on his, he was down for about a week and a half, so he's really, really behind on a lot of things that we have to get done. And he will probably be with us next week. What I'd like to do is I wish everybody a happy Halloween. And if you went up on our webpage at www.bigfootlive.com, on the main page, you see a little happy Halloween with a little clicker underneath it. And you'll see a little ditty on Halloween with yours truly, and all the Bigfoot team in there, and the Monster Mash. So, a little video we made up here. But anyway, I'd like to thank all of our listeners out there for sending us emails and talking to us, giving me calls, let me know what's going on. A lot of things going on all over the country right now. It's pretty busy. I just got a call maybe 15 minutes ago from Texas from a young gentleman, and we're going to probably have him on next week. we can, but he had an encounter as well as he's got a video of it on his cell phone. So I'll be talking to him after the show and getting more details on it and getting him set up for coming on next week and letting us in on what's going on. But there have been sightings all over the place. Let's see. In the past week or so, Nick from Ohio sent me a video, and I'm looking through that right now. And he got some funny things going on in the video that he wants me to take a look at. Our really good friends here, Rocky and Swede. Swede sent me a video of all of their outings. And, man, I'm going to tell you, you guys aren't going to believe. This is some good stuff. And anyway, what I'm going to do is make up some out of that video. I'm going to kind of edit it around a little bit, and we're going to take a look at it in some segments as we go along here. And you'll be able to see a lot of neat things that Swede and Rocky do when they go out there, including, a lot. Tonight, as a matter of fact, Rocky and Swede are going to talk about baiting and baiting the traps and setting up the traps and how to do that. And there's a lot more goes into it than what it seems. You know, a lot of people don't take in consideration. We think we just go out in the woods and tramp around and look for tracks and we find them. But there's so many things to take into account when you're out there in the woods. Safety-wise, there's a lot of danger out there, not from the creature, not from Bigfoot, but there's a lot of danger from other things. And I'm not talking about just animals. I'm talking about the weather. I'm talking about getting lost. There's so many things that you have to take in consideration when you go out into a wilderness area where there are no roads or there's no street signs. And, of course, most of us are in tune to street signs and things that tell us where we're at. In the woods, in the wooded areas or in other wilderness areas, there are signs as well, but they're not street signs that you can read. It's things that you have to learn about nature that allow you to do that. And Rocky and Swede are kind enough to come on tonight, and they're going to tell us some of those things. And as well, we have we have Richard from New York, Dave Ortiz from Four Corners, New Mexico, and Anthony from Virginia. And we're going to be talking with each of those folks and continue to go on the path of which each of them been doing their research on here in the past few months. So why don't we get started with the show, and we're going to go right into it. And our first guest is going to be Dave from Four Corners, New Mexico. All I have to do is find the page here where I can unmute Dave. Here he is. Dave, how are you tonight?
Hello. Hey, doing pretty good.
Trying to do all these things at once, Dave. And I'm looking at three screens on a TV, on you know, computer screens. Uh-huh. Once in a while, I get lost.
Oh, that's fine. I mean, we'll discuss.
So, how have you been?
I've been okay. Yeah, I just had a little cold, but yeah, for the most part, doing pretty good.
Super. I know the last couple of weeks you've been pretty busy.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you give us a thumbnail view of what's been going on?
Okay, sure. Well, this fall so far, we've had probably one of the most active fall seasons probably that week, you know, as far as Bigfoot research is concerned. It's been very heavy. This year we had a good crop of corn. And when I talk about this is mostly down in the river valleys around Farmington, Mexico.
Uh-huh.
But we had a lot of corn, a lot of vegetables. We had pumpkins. We had explosive pumpkin season, watermelon, you know, just fruits from the vine. And following with that, we've also had the most Bigfoot reports just coming out of mostly in the western part of San Juan County where I'm at, toward the river bottoms. But still, I think it's probably been in other areas where people haven't reported it. You know, continuing on with the river basins upstream. But, you know, we'd hear these stories, you know, with a friend, Brenda Harris. You know, there was times she was giving me almost nightly calls. And it seemed like this activity was sometimes just for like two or three days straight, and then it'd lull for a day or two, a night or two, I should say, mostly, and then it'd come right back again. And the problem with it was for us is that we didn't know exactly where it would happen. You know, you could sit yourself in one area, and then maybe 5 miles down the valley, you know, we'd hear the story that there's something going on. So we go out there, and then it'd be in a lull, and then it'd go back to where we were at. It's, you know, it's a topsy-turvy. It's very, very frustrating sometimes. But nevertheless, we've had a pretty good season of investigation and a lot of reports. You know, just people just... I don't think there's, like, the ratio of no reports compared to a lot of reports, you know, compared to people. If you could walk through that whole valley and, you know, knock at the doors and talk, everybody's got a story down there. That's
wow.
How frequent it was. And
it's a little more difficult in your areas there because of the dry land and the dry ground and everything.
Yeah.
For footprints and things, all you can pretty much see is impressions unless you get lucky, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, the ground generally is pretty dry most of the time, unless, you know, it's just been after a thunderstorm. Places that are easier to see are, like, at the side of the rivers where there's sand. And,
yeah.
And there was a few footprints that were taken, you know, with photos and a few castings. What we saw this year, too, we saw basically activity that was, you know, we're not sure if it was synonymous with it, but completely, but we saw what they call black helicopters. We heard that there was black vehicles, you know, black and darkened window vehicles around the area, too, that were actually within the same general area. And we kind of suspected that maybe we did hear a story. Actually, it was pretty recent that there were some black vehicles that had come in and investigating an area. I believe it was not too far from Shiprock.
Uh-huh.
Near it. So, they were doing some investigation there, and I think that, you know, they've had a lot of activity back that way, too. So, yeah, it's just whether it's us or possibly a government agency also checking in on it. It's crazy.
Wow. It's amazing, isn't it? Boy, you know, the calls I've been getting have been from all over.
Uh-huh.
And, like I said, just 5 minutes before the show, I got a call from a guy from Texas.
Oh.
And I'm going to call him after the show to get all the details. But,
oh, great.
It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, they're just all out all over the place.
Yeah. And I was just going to mention, too, 5 years ago, exactly to this day, J.C. Johnson and I had gone to Paris, Texas by request of Tom Biscardi. And at this moment in time, we were actually doing an investigation out there near Paris, Texas.
Yeah.
I it's just clear as a bell. I mean, that was, to me, one of the most sobering situations I'd ever been in, when we had been approached by something. We didn't know exactly what it was, but, you know, we were in teams of two spread out about every 150, 200 feet, and something was approaching JC and I on this very day, actually. It was very amazing.
Yeah, 3 out of the 5 teams had an encounter.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember when we first got there that night, you know, we had no idea where we were supposed to go. Tom had called us out about 2 a.m. to get out there near that lake. And,
yep.
And, you know, we didn't know where we were going. We were going through these little roads that were darkened. And I said, JC, this is pretty creepy. You know?
Yeah, plus there was a storm. And
yeah. And that's really what got me deep into, and then actually we had heard a lot of the whoops and the yell and the tree knocks and stuff on the next expedition back in March of 2008.
Yeah,
it really started piquing my interest. I was a little skeptical at this time. I said, well, you know, I know I think there's a Bigfoot out there, but are people really seeing this, you know, and sure,
right.
We're experiencing it, and it caught me after that, so I haven't let go.
Yeah, I know. Well, I can remember all those. I still have the recordings of those special broadcasts where everybody came back on after. Well, actually, we had on the site from the field right there.
Yeah.
30-minute broadcast, about 4 or 5 of them, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing. They had talked about hearing a baby crying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, whether it was a baby or not. And then they cornered a female behind a rock.
Wow.
One of the teams did, and they went in to try to get closer to it, and it started throwing, rocks started hurling from from side,
yeah,
from where they were at. So they was telling them to get out of there, so that's what they did.
Yeah. I had never
the guy dropped his cell phone, or the guy, everybody's carrying these walkie-talkies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he dropped his walkie-talkie in the mud. So
yeah,
that took care of communications for a while.
Yeah, I mean, we have some audibles here, and usually they're very spaced out, though. It's very just a by-chance encounter, you know. It's sometimes between 1 and 4 in the morning, and, you know, you'll hear it, and that's it. You know, you just don't hear too much after.
Sure.
You'll hear the dogs bark, but out there where we're at in Texas, it was just continuous, just noises, pigs, noise, you know, just...
Well, we're on the show. Remember, we were on the show that one time, and everyone was gathered around the truck because the truck had the amplifier on it.
Yeah.
And there was a howl right across the lake.
Oh, yeah.
From the island on the lake there. You could hear it right on the radio show.
Yeah. And we were in this lake cove that time that, you know, something approached us. This was probably another hour later.
Yeah.
We were all sitting in our positions, and there was a peak. It sounded like a peacock scream. It was just sounded like a peacock, but it went into a high-end frequency that was just way beyond the normal human or even a peacock voice, you know. It's like, wait, that's no peacock. And it was very close. I mean, it echoed in that cove.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that was just quite chilling.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody got quiet. You know, I could hear a little bit of mumble of talk here and there. And like after, when that went, it just got quiet, dead quiet. You know, nobody said anything.
Oh, God. Well, guys, Dave, I want to thank you for coming on tonight to bring us up to speed with what's going on.
Oh, yeah, you're
and,
right.
And I'll keep in contact with you through the week here.
Okay, sounds
and,
good.
And, you know, we'll say hi to Brenda, by the way.
Oh, yeah, sure will.
And, but you're going to hang on, right, for the end of the show?
Yeah, sure will.
Okay, I want to mute you out, and we're going to go to commercial.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Take care. Everybody, that was Dave from Four Corners, New Mexico. And we're going to go on to our little commercial here right now. Here we go.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage, available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And we're back. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go from Four Corners, New Mexico, and we're going to go straight up into the east to New York to our good friend Richard. Good evening, Richard. How are you?
I'm wonderful, Bill.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to say something before we start. Richard has been sending me photos here the last month or so and has gotten some really, really interesting pictures. But this past week, we went over and we got a couple more enhanced pictures of a creature. And they are on a separate slideshow. And it's on www.bigfootlive.com. And if you go onto the table of contents on the main page to the left side, and what's on this week, what's on the show, click on that, you'll come into a page where you're going to have a listing of guests tonight. And under the second guest, you'll see Richard listed. And underneath that, you'll see a slideshow listed. Click on that, and you'll get a couple of really good pictures of that creature. And this is one that you picked out previously, right?
Yes.
Tell us how you went. Tell us the circumstances around this.
Bill, I wish I could, but you know what? I don't even remember taking them.
Okay.
I do blind shooting because I'm convinced they can see that the light that goes out to adjust that focus. I know there's a red light that goes out and comes. I'm sure they can see that. So I just, I think it was taken, actually, because if you look at the picture, there's like a blue haze to it.
Right.
Sitting in my car in the parking lot of the head of the trail.
Uh-huh.
There's a great big hill there, and I think it was standing behind this white tree on the hill. And I was there today in the same spot, and I heard a tree snap from at least, I'd say it was at least 100 yards away, and I still heard the snap, and it was very loud. It wasn't on the ground. It was up high.
Uh-huh.
I think they stand on that hill and then watch the activity going on in what they call the Discovery Center. It's like their entertainment. You can't get up that hill.
Yeah.
You can't get up it. I've tried to get up it. I can't walk up it. It's too vertical.
Well, let's have a little description of the area that you traverse. It's kind of a protected area?
It's a preserve.
Yeah.
It's a private preserve. It's about 5,000 acres.
Mm-hmm.
The trails are very well kept. You can't go off trail for the most part.
Are they hiking trails?
They're hiking trails.
Okay.
Very well kept and marked. You can't go off the trails because there is a couple spots that look like forest, but most of it is really thick bushes that you
Correct.
And I
can't walk. A lot of brush.
You can't walk. You can't go through there. It'd be like going through a 500-yard hedgerow, you know?
Right.
But I'm convinced, I might sound crazy, but that there's actually two different types of creatures there.
Okay.
There's a big one, like you. That guy in the picture is at least 7 feet tall. Okay?
Right.
And there's a much smaller one that looks more like a hominid. And they wear skins, too. That creature in that picture, I'm convinced
yeah.
it's got a skin on.
Well, are you sure it's a skin? Are you sure it's a skin? Or it can also be matted hair.
It could be.
It looks like a skin.
It could be. But if you look real close, Bill, on the top, on your right, on the side of the head, it looks
yeah.
like there's a face, another face. If you
yeah.
look at it real close, and Roger said he thought it was a baby on it, you know, that had climbed up there. I don't know. I can't explain it.
Well, it's hard to tell. I mean, sometimes
it's not absolutely clear, but to my eye, I've been looking at those pictures so long, it's clear to me. I mean,
no, I understand.
There's something there. I don't know what it is, but
mm-hmm.
Another thing, Bill. I've got a video of an area where there's at least, I'd say, 10 piles of scat, much bigger than. Human-sized.
Right.
And there was actually a human. They look like little curlicues with white on the top. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But there was also, at this point, human scat that looked like human, but much too large. I mean, huge.
Right.
And I had taken a piece of it, and then I said to myself, maybe they do ride horses through there. Maybe it was from a horse. But I don't think so. Not in that area.
Well,
I've never seen.
Well, you've seen horse.
Yeah. I mean, well,
horse apples are called apples for a reason.
Well, this was more human-like, Bill, and it was you.
No, I know. I mean, a horse apple is not like. I mean, horse manure is much, much, much different.
Right.
Than, I mean, it doesn't get curlicued or any of that. It's usually a little round, balls or. They call them apples, right?
Yeah, the curlicue ones looked almost like, not like cowplops, but kind of like cowplops. You know what I'm saying?
Well, cows normally when they're doing it, it's kind of a sloop.
I don't want to get too graphic.
That's why they call them cow pies.
But I can send you that video.
Yeah.
I will send you that video.
There's a definite difference that you can tell between human type waste or feces and a cow or a horse
yeah, well,
or a deer or many of the other animals, goats. I mean,
each one has its own particular type of formation, and what they eat primarily is what the issue is, but also how their stomach digests the
right.
food, and it depends on how, you know, when it comes out, and it's the normal circumstance for some of that stuff is, you know, a cow manure is really loose, usually loose, because it's all grassy type, you know, a liquid type of stuff, and not only that, but they digest, you know, they got four stomachs to take, mm-hmm. has to process, has to go through, right? Once they chew their cud.
The only other big mammals in it, they get an occasional black bear. And
that's even discernible when you look
yeah,
at
I know,
bear.
I looked it up. It's not that. And the coyotes, you could tell the difference on that, too.
Right, yeah.
And deer. And you could tell the difference on that.
Well, deer are completely different.
It was none of that. It looks like they used that spot as a latrine for a day.
Mm-hmm.
And also, in that same area, I have another video. There must be 25 or 30 tree snaps in that area. So by where the part I can't go in anymore that's closed off.
Right.
Where I heard the two individuals, there's at least 20 tree snaps in that one area.
Holy smokes.
And one about 20 feet up and really snapped a big one. Most of them are small ones, but there's a big one that snapped. And at that trailhead, when I first started going there, about 75 feet down the beginning of the trail, there was a huge branch that was broken that I had to just about crawl under to get on the trail. Evidently, they didn't want people on the trail, you know?
Now, have you seen any what we call tree twists?
No, never. Never, Bill.
Okay.
They don't seem to do that. I don't know if it...
Well, normally, in most cases, I mean, this is pretty frequent and pretty common. Most cases, the tree twists or tree formations, I believe, tell where the direction. They give a sign of where they're going.
Yep.
It's also a sign of where they've been or what the territory is as well.
What I did see... And the other spot I go to where I actually had a visual sighting, Bill?
Yeah.
Again, a hill. And it was a hollowed out area on the hill where something could lay down and not be seen and look out. Plus,
sure.
Within...
Layer?
Yeah, plus within maybe 25 feet of that, there was a small enclosure made of winding... twigs and little trees, you know, together. It wasn't very big. But from what I've seen, some of these creatures aren't very big. You know, the little...
Yeah, you know, you're saying, well, you know, the one size is just like 7 foot or more.
No.
The other size is what, about, what, 3-4 foot?
This was what this was like. And it was right in the area where I saw that black one walk right across that ridge.
Uh-huh.
They always, to me, it seems like they always try to stay on high ground if they can. Because I know you can't go up that quick.
Now, have you been able to see them in kind of a group formation or anything?
No, but I know group formation. Bill, I mean, I know I probably see things that other people don't see. But in that very first video I got with the one going across the field and disappearing into the tree line, there's got to be 15 or 20 individual creatures that I can pick out. In that video.
Wow.
Watching me. And I got another video where there's at least 10. You can see the big black faces off, and you see the little ones hiding behind a tree peeking out. And when I turn my camera, I can send you that video too, but I'd have to, as I turn my camera back towards it, you can see where it ducks down. It's only about 2 feet tall, but there's much, much bigger ones in the background.
Wow.
They know Mama and Pop is out there watching for them, believe me. If you were to go towards them, I can't get over there anyway. They could get away from me so fast, that I couldn't get near them anyways because the one I saw run across the path was so fast, I couldn't believe it. And you know what? I told Roger that I think I almost stepped on one on the side of the trail. I don't walk too well because I've only got 9 toes.
Yeah.
And I kind of wobble. And I took a step, and I heard a scream you couldn't believe, Bill. It was no rabbit. It was much too loud, and I could swear I looked to my left, and I saw what I would call a big, it's not a silverback, but a big one and on all fours, maybe 75 yards off, coming to see what the scream was. And that's guy. I'll take a lie detector test to anything I say. I may not be right, but I believe it's right.
Huh.
And I don't make up stuff to make up, because if I had to make up stuff about this, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. It's not worth it. I'm only doing it. I'm like Tom and Rocky. I want to get to the bottom of this. I want to find out the truth.
Yeah.
It's not worth lying over.
No, but I don't think anybody would think that. What I'm getting at is the hard part a lot of times, Richard, is when we're looking at things, okay, and things happen in a very quick fashion. In other words, you don't get more than a second, 2 second view. It's difficult for your brain to register what it was. You know what I'm saying? Even in the videos, I'm looking at 3 videos right now, and they're very, very quick, and I got to take them frame by frame just to see what action is there. You know what I mean? And even though the frames are blurry, you can get detail from the frames, and it put a, you know, you get a longer view of what's being done. Well, if you can imagine, your eyes are seeing these things in motion all the time, and if it's something very fast, sometimes it's difficult to, you know, just to ascertain what it is. I mean, you know what you thought you saw, or you have some sort of simulation of what it was. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
it's
difficult to penetrate, you know, to make a judgment on exactly what it was, because it just wasn't long enough or indelible enough for your brain to absorb it all.
I consider myself, Bill, one of the luckiest people in the world, because I've had 2 visual sightings, and I've actually heard 2 of them converse in what, you know, they call samurai or whatever it is, okay?
Sure.
And the first sighting I had was, like you said, it was a gray blur on all fours. It wasn't a coyote. It was much too big.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really get a good look at it. But my second one, it was about a 4 or 5 second look that was 5 times better than what you see in the Patterson film. A not too heavily built creature with its arms, elbows bent, with its hands down, with a sagittal crest, jet black, and it had kind of, I wouldn't want to say the mouth protruded, it had like bigger lips, and the mouth came like a monkey or chimp.
Yeah.
But it was jet black, and it was so quick, if you weren't looking where it was, you would have never seen it, but I saw it for about 7 seconds. And
that's pretty good. Once you see something like that, you can't, then it's difficult for you to accept anybody saying, well, hey, you didn't see that you saw. And that's what happens to everybody. I mean, when you've had a visual encounter of one of these things, it's an unforgettable experience.
And it was within 200 yards of houses.
Yeah. But that's not uncommon anymore. No. I mean, I think it's
more common than people think.
Yeah.
Be truthful with you?
I know it is because of the reports that I get.
I think you have more luck looking in those kind of fringe areas than you do out in the deep woods.
Well, a lot of things, I think Dave and everybody else have made it pretty clear. These creatures are, they're not going to, although they want to forage in the wilderness, they want to eat.
Yeah.
And they want to drink water. Mm-hmm. And I think, if there's fields available with vegetables and other things, they're going to go and they're going to try to get what they can. Garbage cans, too. I mean, what the heck?
Oh, yeah.
Several instances where these things have come around garbage cans and raided them. And, look at these bait. I mean, what do you think the bait traps are?
Uh-huh.
Nothing more than a, some sort of a bait that's going to, you know, give an odor that's going to carry out not just to the creatures, but to other animals as well.
I know Tom feels this way, but like Dave was saying with the helicopters, I'm almost positive the government knows about these things.
Well, they may. We've got a lot of, you know, different stories and aspects of stories and things that would say that there's organizations out there that are sort of clandestine that are keeping these things under the wraps, and they seem to try to force people into removing the thing from their memories.
Or trying to keep the scare out of
right,
the area.
They threaten them and all kinds of things. And I mean, it's several instances we have of that. And so, you know, you don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell. But, I mean, we do know that they are aware of some of these things, yeah.
One other thing, yeah. Bill.
Yeah.
In the area that I can't go into now.
Yeah.
I saw two trees full of vultures in there, and I've seen a whole bunch of crows there. And I can only surmise they may make kills, and they take the kills back to those areas, and they're waiting to get to the remains, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're staying where there's food, the vultures, turkey vultures.
Well, sure.
It was
Eerie. I want to thank you for coming on tonight.
You're welcome, sir.
A little bit over time. And you're going to stay on till the end, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks for coming on, Richard, and thanks for sharing. And those are some pretty neat pictures. If you folks haven't seen those yet, you take a look at those pictures. It's some pretty neat stuff. I'm going to mute you out right now, good buddy, and we'll see you at the end of the show.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Richard from New York. And next we're going to go to Anthony from Virginia. Anthony, how are you?
Doing all right there, Marco Bill. I hope you're doing fine.
Well, why don't you tell us what's been happening?
Well, around here it's been a little quiet lately. I do still think that these buggers are still back there. You know, I'm guessing probably because of the, you know, we got to turn the clock back soon, and I guess I think it's just a matter of timing. Maybe, you know, and this is just me. I could be wrong, but you know, I just think. You know, when I'm out there trying to, you know, record some of this stuff, you know, I just don't think I have the time, right? Because, you know, we got less sun, you know, the sundown's earlier. I'm thinking they might be coming out earlier, you know, and that type of thing. So, you know, but we are planning to go out again this weekend. This time we're planning to spend the night, all night out there. We got, game cameras loaded. We got some bait. We got some batteries. We snacks and stuff. We're you know, large pot of coffee. We're planning on, you know,
large pot of coffee is the important one.
You're not kidding. So we're gonna take advantage, you know, because it did warm up a little bit. So you know, before you know, I mean, it's easier to spend the night out in the woods when it's warm than when it's cold. So you know. Well, I'm going to take advantage of the temperature rise and hopefully come back with some good evidence.
That'd be great. Now, what about your friend?
He hasn't had anything except the only thing that he has noticed is, you know, the dog, you know, his neighbor's dogs and everything like that acting up, but he has not, you know, so far that the holes that were, you know, carved out of the branch in his big oak tree there.
Yeah.
Nothing else has happened since we had, you know, and I'm guessing it's, you know, possibly because, you know, to take that picture, he had to pull that branch down, you know. I don't know if because we touched it, you know, that they don't want to touch it anymore. I'm not sure. But, you know, so far nothing else has happened around that area, but with the exception of, you know, his dogs, his neighbor's dogs, and his dogs have just been acting weird, but hadn't seen or heard anything, but you know, but their reaction makes them think that, you know, they're there, but they're just not, you know, doing anything. So
now, do you guys, when you guys go out there, do you take any precautions?
Oh yes, I do.
Precautions on scent and things like that.
Yeah, we spray ourselves with the descent, like if we're going out hunting. That's number, you know, that's one of the things. And you know, if it's the summertime, you know, we'll use bug spray as well. But I don't go unarmed in the woods, you know, because again, it's not just these creatures that are out there.
No, there's so many other things.
Yeah, there's so many other things, and there have been bear sightings. Just a few weeks ago, my friend showed me in broad daylight. He had pulled over in the road. He pulls out his cell phone camera, and you couldn't see it, but they just happened to notice it, and so they pulled over real quick, and there was a bear hiding down low in the grass. The bear was waiting for the car in the westbound direction to pass, and then it just, and they were heading eastbound, and then the bear just crossed the highway, divided highway right there in front of them.
Wow.
And this is the new high. We got bobcat, we got foxes, raccoons, and all the other wild animals and stuff. So, not to mention, copperheads or whatever, so I don't think it's, I think, you should have some type of protection for self-defense against these creatures if they...
For that matter, if it's hunting season, you probably want to have something anyway, because sometimes you're good game for the hunters.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the hunters are not too well versed in hunting, and they can easily shoot a person as they could an animal.
Oh, yeah.
Had an incident when I was about 18 years old, where we owned about 200 or 300 acres of woodland, and it was backed by a farm. And this one young kid came down from the cities, was staying at his aunt's house, and he borrowed his uncle's gun, and he went out, and he got himself he's going to get himself a deer. Of course, it wasn't deer season yet. It hadn't opened yet.
Oh.
But he seen there was all kinds of deer running around, right? So he thought he would go out there and get him one. And he went to the very back portion of that acreage.
Right.
And seen this rustling in the bushes and heard this heck of a beller. And he shot three times. Killed himself a beautiful 2,000-pound breeding bull. Worth about $5,000.
Oh, boy. Yeah, was that
so,
the
he,
part of the funny?
Well, I don't think his family was too pleased with him. The farmer wasn't too pleased with it because that was his prize breeding bull.
Oh, brother.
And if you take a look at what the cost of each steak was, it came out to be pretty expensive.
Yeah, $5,000 before it was cut.
Wow, yeah. Well, gosh, I want to thank you for coming on tonight and giving us a rundown of what's going on. Things don't happen every single week, There are dead times too, but you guys are pretty vigilant out there. I know.
For your listeners, if you spend the night out in the woods, like me or some of the other guests and stuff like that, they could spend hours and hours and hours, or even and if they have the luxury of doing it, a whole weekend or a whole week, you can spend hours out there,
Of course.
2, 3, 10 second sighting, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So, don't see anything and just record, maybe 30 seconds of howl, so it just confirms that they're there, they're coming through, but,
Well, it is a very, very patient process.
Yeah.
And, when you're out there, a lot of people think, you just go out there and hunt, and boom, you got what you want, and boom, you got what you want. And, even deer hunting or any other kind of hunting, rabbits or anything, hunting is what it is. You got to hunt.
Yeah.
And you have to know the environment. You have to know some things. And you have to know where they
where the particular animal that you're hunting for is or hangs out and what his habits are. And there's a bunch of things. And it's just like going fishing, you know. Fishermen, you know, you just don't put your pole in the water and come up with a fish. I mean, you can, but it's not very likely. But when you're looking for, you know, like, you know, a rock bass or something specific, you have to go to where they hang out.
That's right.
And so, you know, it's a learning process.
Yeah, unless you know where the honey hole is, you got to wait.
That's it. Well, thanks for coming on, Anthony. You going to wait for the end here?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and coming up next, as soon as we get done with this commercial here, we're going to talk to Rocky and Sweet, and they're going to tell us a little something about baiting and some other things. We'll be right back.
All
right.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And here we're back again. And now we're going to go out to Rocky and Sweet. Rocky and Sweet, how are you?
Well, I'm doing really good.
I'm
glad to hear that everybody's getting over their flu.
God, I tell you, it's going around, I guess. Well, gosh. Well, you know, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I talked to Rocky and Sweet earlier this week. And a lot of people go out, and a lot of you listeners out there, you know, we talk about different things. For instance, I mean, Rocky and Sweet a lot of times talk about cold camp and some other terms. And, of course, they talk about it because they're completely at ease with, the vernacular, and they understand totally what the environment that they're in. But a lot of times when we use terms, we just throw them around, and we don't, you know, myself included, when we're talking about these creatures, we'll throw some terms around, and it may not be infinitely clear to what it means or what it is, or what surrounds it. And one of the things that I thought, we're out in the, you know, people go out in the woods trying to, in a wooded area or in a wilderness area, and they're doing a search. It may not even be for this creature. It may be for anything, whatever it might be, deer, rabbit, hogs, whatever. Hunting is hunting. And there are definite things that you have to maintain. And one of the things that we always talk about on the show is, you know, we always tell you, hey, we get these sardines, and they like sardines, and they like peanut butter and stuff like that. Well, you know, why do they like sardines? Well, it's not that they so much love sardines, but sardines put out a smell, a scent that covers a very large, large area. And this, you know, so there are some things that Rocky and Sweet have used and learned, not just for this creature, but for any animals. And because when they put these bait traps up there, it's not just the creature that comes and tries to get them. What they do is they put it in a particular kind of a situation to where only that creature can reach it and get it, okay, if it wants it. And then all the other creatures, the tree-climbing little creatures, the little raccoons and all the other things, they can't get it because of how they set the trap up. But anyway, we're going to have them talk about baits and the kinds of baits and other things that they use when they go out and what they're aware of and how they sense things when they become one with nature. Is that right, Sweet and Rocky?
Exactly.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
Well, why don't you guys go ahead and start off?
Go ahead, Slade.
Well, our our situation with the baiting thing, it could be like Marco said, we do a different technique for hogs, and we've done a different, different technique for coons, or a different technique, the Sasquatch, the Bigfoot, the creature baiting thing has evolved pretty recently. I mean, like over the last 4 or 5 years, we've kind of developed our own thing for that. And it has changed. It has evolved and evolved to where it has become pretty foolproof, and it works. We don't have the waste. We don't have the trouble. If our bait has been messed with, there's pretty much only one thing that can get it. Not because it's just so high, or not because it's on the strongest rope, or not that, it's the best bait, but all the combination of all the aspects makes it where it functions. And what we've found is, our first go around was the apple. I mean, we've went out, on request with Tom on some expeditions to see some stuff, and we've seen and we've done this too, the peanut butter on the tree thing. Well, we've had all kinds of, we've sat on that and viewed it with night vision, and if you don't have just a really hot spot, you're going to get invaded by the coons. And like when me and Rocky were in South Arkansas, we saw a coon down there that weighed 75 pounds because he'd been eating a 25-pound block of peanut butter over the last 3 weeks that the fellow was putting out. But we had changed gears to the apple thing. We started out with Rocky. You want to tell them about the apple trick?
Well, what we started out with was a apple with a little wedge cut out of it with some peanut butter smeared in it, stuck on a stick on the side of a tree, which the next day the coon would eat it. Then we started hanging it off of the limb with a piece of string, and well, the next day the coon had eaten it. So then we took a piece of wire and doubled it, punched it through the apple core, and then bent the ends of it up to where it would hold the apple on. And we hung it off a tree limb, but we had it about 6 foot from the trunk of the tree. And we had it was about 9-10 feet off the ground. And we had lard on the paracord that was holding it up. Well, the coon kind of wanted to go down to get the apple, but he found the paracord was just way too slick, and so he went somewhere else to eat supper. Well, we did that a few times, and we actually had an apple or two disappear, but went out hunting one day. It was hog hunting, and my brother, who's a big-time hunter, he said he suggested that we take sweet potatoes and apples and bake them, and once they softened up enough, take a potato masher and just mash them to a pulp and spread that around. Well, we thought about that, and well, spreading that around didn't seem to us like it'd work out for anything except maybe hogs and things that were pretty close to the ground. But anyhow, Robert has lots of different kinds of material over cloths over at his house, and so we cut up Well, actually, it's gunny sacks, just burlap. We cut it in 12 by 12 squares, and we spread the basically the paste that we'd made out of the sweet potatoes and apples. And well, that worked good. That worked real good. And we hung it to where nothing but something really tall could get it. And we found that after it hung, after we left it hanging for a while, it'd start to dry out. Well, we'd walk by and just squirt some water on it and rehydrate it. And all of a sudden, you know, we got the desired result again. And then it was just a short time back. Me and the Swede was, we was smearing some of it on the burlap, and I got some on my hand, and well, I ate some of it, and I immediately ran in the house and got some black strap molasses and mixed in there. Now then we have to make twice as much because I usually eat about half of it on the way out. But anyhow, we think we've hit on a really good formula because you can smell it. I can smell it. And, you know, my nose doesn't work like the Swede's does, but I can smell it from a pretty good distance. And anyhow, same thing. Hang it high up off the ground. Hang it far away from the trunk of the tree.
Put it on a substantial limb.
A very substantial limb with some very substantial paracord or something of the like. I mean, it's always gone, regardless of what we've tied it up with, but, you know, there's no sense in just giving it away. But anyhow, we've got a good formula going there. It brings in every hog, coon, possum, everything. But the only thing that's been able to get it so far is just something that's tall enough to reach up and get it. And that leaves the bears out because we don't have big bears in Arkansas. They're not any bigger, any taller than a tall one isn't any taller than the Swede is. And, you know, when we hang them, the Swede can't reach up and get them. He can't jump up and get them. We hang them high enough that anything that gets it is either going to have to be really good at jumping or just really tall.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had
limbs broken down.
Yeah, we've lost our share of bait now. We run string. It's a heavy thread. We run it all the way around where we have the bait. So anything that comes through, it has to be 6 foot or tall or taller to get into the thread. That way we'll know, you know, get an approximate size, and also an approximate time of day as to when it came through. And, it's just, you know, lots of little tricks, and well, we've been asked why we don't have a game camera up. We've never hunted with a game camera. We always hunt with guns, and we hunt by sight, we hunt by smell, we hunt by ear, and the baiting thing is it's the way to go because, you know, I know people that have hunted for decades, have deer hunted for decades, and never seen one that wasn't hit on the highway. And so we don't count on luck. We try to make it as easy on it as possible, and that makes it pretty easy on us. It's just getting down to where it's at. But
another Rocky, something else about the baiting too that we've kind of learned is like underneath your we thought at first, you know, to disturb the site underneath the bait was a no-no, but we've come to find out that that's not true. The bears and the pigs and everything comes in there to that sweet potato smell to our bait, and whether it would be in any kind of baiting, there's always something coming in there, even if it's the target subject or not, there's something coming to it. So the ground gets all chopped up anyway there when they're trying to get around in there and they mess it all up. So we've come up with the bright idea, we just remove the leaf underneath that. Open it up to where if the hogs come in there and they leave a bunch of tracks, if a creature comes in there, he's got such a big foot, he's just going to stomp down on that freshly tilled ground that them hogs has made and leave a great imprint. Now, that puts you in the position where you've got to run the traps at least. I mean, you got to run your baits at least once a day or you'll get a bunch of more hog tracks back on your footprint from the night. So generally, we try to run our baits first thing in the morning after the night. We'll go out and stay out at night. We'll come back, get a little sleep just for an hour or two, and then go run our traps at day, run our baits at daylight and check it out. If something's been there, that footprint will still be there fresh, and you'll know what's there. Now, we've seen some big impressions, but we weren't sure absolutely because we just kind of started doing this. But we've seen big bear prints overlapping, and it kind of give you that impression. But we're not absolutely sure that we've got an impression of a creature's footprint as of yet, but we're fairly confident that we have, but we're not just, I mean, we didn't cast it or anything. It's kind of hard to tell. It was pretty dry. But that's a great tip, is to just, under your bait, clean the leaves back to where you might can get you a good footprint. I don't think it seems to bother them too much if you've got other critters coming to your bait that's going to be stirring up stuff. They don't even pay any attention to them leaves not being there. I mean, as far as I can tell. Was that what you think, Rocky, on that take?
Well, I think that's a good idea. I've thought about taking, like, bags of sand down.
Yeah.
But when you start down through the woods with a 50-pound bag of sand on your shoulders as deep as we're going in, well, it's just...
It's a lot of trouble.
You know, unless you have somebody to carry it for you, it's just not worthwhile.
Right, and, right. And we got so much gear on our four-wheelers, we can't add on. We got our stuff that we have to have when we go because we never know what kind of situation we're going to get stuck into. But the baiting thing is a trial and error thing, and that's our trial and error that's worked for us in the sweet potatoes and the apple situation.
And the black strap.
And the black strap molasses is just an
outstanding. The molasses is the topper.
It's the topper, and it's just an outstanding bait. It stays in that burlap. It don't drip out of it. That pulp's still there. You can get a week or so out of that bait if you'll just go back through there and take your little spray bottle, and you can ride up there to it. If you want to ride up there to it with the four-wheeler, or if you're going to walk in there with some rubber boots where you're not scenting it up, and just reach up there and spray that bait after it's been in. And this is for summertime now. When it's hot, it dries it out. And just rehydrate it. Boy, I mean, it just brings it right back to life. And it doesn't, you can get a week or more out of that bait in scent. So that's really good for not having to go back to it every time. When we go back and check it, we don't go right to the bait. We'll get within a 100 yards and eyeball it with a pair of binoculars and see what's happened. You know, wade right in on the bait. And it seems to work out pretty good. You know, I mean, if it's tore down, you know it is, then we'll go on and start setting up a little surveillance there at nighttime and sit around there and see what we can find, to see if we hear any vocalizations or tree knockings or for a sighting. But it's a good way to get you a little heads up to see where you might want to, you know, you can cover a lot of ground and not have to be there. Like Dave at Four Corners was saying, he's got something going on down there down here at this part of the valley, and then they move and it happens down the way. Well, if you keep a steady bait up and that bait keeps getting visited, you know that if you spend two or three days there on that bait, you're going to have something. You may have to commit to it for two or three days and stay right on it, but you might might have a good result in time.
Well, you've got to bear in mind, too, that it's an intelligent creature.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I mean, a bear will come every night. Yes, as long as there's food there, a bear will come every night.
That's right, Rob.
This thing, we've hung bait up, had it taken, and then never visited again.
Never.
But maybe the bait up the next bait up the trail may get it 2-3 times in a row.
Well, let's open it up to everybody. I'm going to put, see, Anthony's on. Bruce, the steak man, is on. Dave, you're on.
Yeah.
And Richard, you're on. And Steve, you're on.
Yep.
We got Swede and Rocky.
Hi, guys. How are y'all doing?
How you doing?
Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Richard.
Hey, Bruce.
Richard,
I was going to call you tomorrow.
Richard wasn't on last Wednesday. I wanted him to know, yes, carry a shotgun.
Hey,
carry a shotgun of sluts.
Yeah, I might sound stupid, but is the barrel rifled on a shotgun?
No, you use, a slug-specific shotgun barrel will be rifled, but you have to use a Sabot slug, which is... it's got a little plastic thing over the bullet itself. Okay, can't use those in a non-rifle. You want to use the Foster style slug, which is a rifled slug, and like I say last week, it's approximately a 75 caliber bullet, weighing in at around 550 grains. It's 3/4 of an inch across the nose. It's going about 1,670 feet per second, but it's got over 3,000 foot-pounds of energy. So by all means,
could put anything down.
Anything in North America, for sure.
Yeah. If it doesn't go down with the first shot, use the second shot on yourself. seriously, the shotgun slug is good for anything on the North American continent. There's a lot of things I wouldn't want to shoot with one because I want to shoot from further away.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, in fact, I know a lot of people in bear country carry a double barrel 12 with buckshot on one side and a slug on the other. But that is the gun to take all the doubt out, because it's usually a situation like that. It's going to be up close.
Well, there was a I think was it Rene DeHinden that said he told somebody that they should carry a shotgun with a mix of buckshot and slugs.
Well, the buckshot.
No, I say all slugs.
Yeah, the buckshot is good for social events, like when bad people come in your house.
Mm-hmm.
But out someplace like that, if I have buckshot, it stays in the truck and I load up with slugs.
Yep, I'm with you on that one.
Can anybody tell me how good they think the sense of smell of these things are?
Excellent.
You think so? Even though
excellent.
They're a primate?
Excellent sense of smell.
I know from my experience, I'm not sure about the smell, but I know they have an awesome sense of, their vision is excellent, because the one that I couldn't see with my eyes, I couldn't see it unless I had with my binoculars, which is what I talked about a couple of weeks ago, and I seen that dark figure in the woods, and I just glanced up, and I mean, that thing just disappeared. But there was no way. There was no way I would have seen that creature unless I had those binoculars, But they were watching me.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I couldn't see them unless I had the binoculars.
And
a primate out in the wild. Depends a lot on its sense of smell to find the things that are out of range of their eyes at the time to give them, to let them know that there's a lion around or something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, these things, when I say excellent, I'm not saying that they've got bloodhound noses or deer noses or anything like that, but they sure got better than I do.
They can slink away so quietly that it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
For one thing, they look like people say they see blob squatches. Yeah, people see blob squatches, but sometimes it's the real deal, and you look there and you think it's a shadow, and you look again and the shadow's gone. They can get out of there. They don't make any noise. I've heard them make noise when they walk, but I think they wanted me to hear them. They were trying to intimidate me.
Hey, Richard, I've seen one cross the path. Couldn't have been no more than 30, 40 feet in front of me. This happened last year. It was big, all white or gray, you know. And mm-hmm. when it went across the path, didn't even make a sound. And this was a gravel path. You know what I'm saying?
But you know what? My first sighting, I heard it long before I saw it. It was like a clicking sound when it went before it hit the trail. I could hear like a clicking sound. And it was like a panther. It was like a gray blaze. I'd hate to have one chasing me because you'd never get away from it. I couldn't get away from anything anyways. I'd give the nine-toed stumble to get out of there.
Carry a shotgun and you don't have to run as fast.
That's yeah, right. Well.
Well, I always use natural deterrents myself, like pepper spray. Something that'll make mess up their sense of smell.
Yeah.
If
that's
I have
good
to
idea.
Get away quick.
That's a good idea. It's not one. That is a personal preference. That's, I'm not convinced that I'm going to go out there even with bears. I know I've been sprayed with the bear stuff. It's bad. It's bad news. But at the same time, I want to be sure that whatever it is, anything that big and strong and all that,
right.
I would rather hang a slug in it somewhere.
Right.
Now, you guys do carry guns. Now, do you think if you shot one, that there's other ones that would come out from every place and anywhere that you couldn't see until they were on you?
That's a possibility.
Anything.
But that's why we carry repeating shotguns. Mm-hmm. And mine holds 8, and when I fire the last shot, I've got 6 more hanging on the side of it, and I can drop it in and single shoot it really fast.
Mm-hmm. And you carry a pistol as backup, right?
Oh yeah.
I always carry a pistol. You know, I'm just like in every other situation, I think a pistol is the perfect weapon to give you time to get hold of a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
you're right.
Hey, this is the Snake Man again here in Paris. I had one question for you guys. Have you guys had any reports or sightings of any animals dismembered by Sasquatch?
Found some skulls.
Rumors. Yeah. Rumors. Not. Couldn't say for positive that it was. Down in a little way south of where I live, there was the old woman said that she saw something take about a year old a heifer, and it cleared the fence carrying the cow, and anyhow nobody chose to believe her. Everybody said that it was probably a bear, and bears don't do that. Nothing positive, but rumors of it.
Now, No, you.
The only thing that I'm aware of, there's a couple of times that I'm aware of, is in Alabama, where they found a deer where the actual antler was pulled out of the brain.
Wow.
And, yeah, I mean, it was, like, snapped right off, and the brains were showing. And then the second thing was, the second deer, there's two deer, second deer, the neck was broken, and what was really neat was the deer had been skinned, not with a knife, but skinned by hand, and the skin folded around the pile. And then, of course, the innards, which I believe a lot of animals, I mean, the lions and other animals do the same thing. They'll eat the liver and the heart first,
mm-hmm.
and the gall, because it's salty, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but they'll also take, you know, like a side or a, you know, the hind leg or something like that.
Right.
But that was that incident, and that's what they found, and that's what the scene was when they came upon it.
Michael,
you remember Bill? That woman, Susan, from over my way, Marco Bill, that talked about the dog that got ripped in half?
Yes, yeah. A lot of animals. I've had many recordings of cats, dogs, raccoons, gifting. Several people had been gifted with the bones of small animals. In
right.
other words, what they did is they left the little bones of the animals as a gift.
Right.
I just want
that kind of thing. As far as there, of course, there are a lot of rumors, and but I'm kind of leaning towards the thing that if this creature wanted to, I mean, take a look at what it can do. It can take a 2-inch branch and just twist it around. Okay?
Right.
There is
if it can do that, I mean, what can it do? I mean, if it really wanted to hurt somebody, what do you think it could do?
There is people that go missing that hike, Marco.
Oh, there is. But
I mean,
there's only two incidents that I'm aware of that took place about 10 years ago, I think now. And they were both in Canada, and one, these guys were out actually hunting for a creature. Their families did not want it to be broadcast that they were hunting for a creature. One with a bow and arrow, the other with some heavy armament, and both of them were found about 8 months or 9 months later. But it hadn't appeared that a bear had killed them or anything like that, and it appeared that they died from, like, you know, broken necks.
It could be badass ones that are just lousy individuals, like you.
Well, no, I mean, if you're out hunting something and you shoot it or you shoot at it, I mean, if somebody shoots at you, what are you going to do?
Yeah, but there's all kinds of people. There's probably all kinds of the creatures, too.
Well, there very well can be. I mean, look at Roger Peterson, his incident. I mean, it was probably a juvenile, and it was probably a cranky juvenile.
Mm-hmm.
And it attacked him. Rocky's been attacked pretty substantially, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Why did they attack him?
Mine was Peterson.
Now, Rocky...
I was attacked. I had hands laid on. I learned to fly for a short distance. But,
shorter than the Wright brothers.
Hey, Rocky, were you able when it had you, were you able to put your hands on it? Did you?
I didn't. I was able to hold on and stick it with a old K-bar a whole bunch of times.
But I'm wondering if you felt how muscular it was.
I felt how muscular it was, by the way it
That doesn't sound right.
Well, you know.
It was squeezing my guts out.
Uh-huh.
And, well, I wrestled a 650-pound bear once upon a time, and I thought that was the strongest thing in the world. Well, this thing was about the same height as me, but it felt to me like it was as strong or stronger than the bear. Because, I mean, it threw me a good distance.
You think you really hurt it?
Wow.
Do what?
Do you think you really hurt it?
I know.
Well, that makes me glad that my encounters were all friendly ones. I mean,
hey, I tell you what. You guys were talking a while ago about.
Snake Man. Well, I understand that. The issue isn't that they're not friendly. I mean, if that was true, then we probably would have a whole bunch of casualties on our hands. But the thing is, if you don't know, you don't know. You don't know whether or not it's going to be. And if it's in a bad mood or if it's in a protective mood, you don't know if it's protecting its young, if you're coming upon its coming upon its area where it's female and its young aren't. And any of those circumstances would be something that would warrant defense.
Right.
Me and the Swede know a family. We know both of the brothers and all that, and the dad, the mom, everybody. And they've never had any, all of these people that know them think they're the greatest people in the world. And then they meet the youngest son, Mark. And then, where these others have been nothing but good to them, Mark beats the living snot out of them because they were there. So, that's one of those things out of this family of really nice people. You know who I'm talking about, don't you, Swede?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Out of this family of people that, everybody likes so much, you have the one, and, everybody's afraid of him. Well, it's the same way with them. They might be just the sweetest creatures in the world, and then you walk up on the one that bites the top of your head off.
Right.
And there's also some other things to consider, too. There could be an environmental issue of maybe some parasites or something like that would be, could infect the brain. It happens in humans. Why couldn't it happen to a Bigfoot? There could be psychological issues there that just puts one over the edge.
Right. Question I have, too, is, do you think Bigfoot would be susceptible to the rabies virus?
Yeah, I think anything susceptible to it. Any kind of an animal is.
Any mammal. With blood is susceptible to rabies.
I deal with critters all my life, okay? I don't care what kind of critter it is. I've met them all, pretty much, okay? There's something weird about Bigfoot. When I encountered him, he didn't try to hurt me. He did try to charge me. But like you said, that was protecting his family, his young, or her young. That was over in Frost, Texas. You remember that, Marco?
Yeah.
Okay. But I had to do what I had to do to protect my team, That's why I stood.
That's what you got to do. That's what
Pardon?
You got to do.
Exactly. But, there's not. Who's to say what the reason was? It's just, it's sad that, the thing attacked you, okay?
I thought so, too.
Well.
It was kind of an upset night for me. The bears around here, we saw the one over by Robert's place, it was about 150-pounder, and then we saw a fat bastard that was, like I say, the biggest bear I've ever seen in Arkansas. No problem at all. Okay, over at the other place, we have the Hobbit. The Hobbit's a little guy, but he is the meanest little bastard in the world.
Got a head.
Right. And we're eventually probably going to end up killing him because he goes where people go and he gets in their stuff, and I'm not too sure that he wouldn't
jump on.
He wouldn't attack a person.
But, you know, that's where I use the pepper spray is. In case of an emergency, if, say, an animal was chasing you, use the pepper spray, and it'll confuse their sense of smell.
Well, I can
go
along with that, but, you know, if I'm out and a bear charges me, I'm going to try to kill it because the next guy that's out there might not have bear spray or a shotgun or anything, and, you know, it's just one of those things. I might not even like the guy that comes along after me. But still,
hey, Bruce?
Yeah.
I'm kind of obligated.
Hey, Bruce?
Yeah.
Tell him about that stuff I brought with me from California in that bottle.
Oh, Giant brought this big old jar of cured garlic. I mean, pure garlic. That stuff would make a Bigfoot pass out.
Hey, I want to tell Sweet and Rocky something. Now, I live about maybe 3 miles from downtown Albany, the capital of New York.
Uh-huh.
Last year, they killed a bear about a mile. 2 years ago, they killed a bear on the State University of New York campus a mile from my house. The bear could have walked to the Capitol. We get black bears up in trees all the time here.
Well, we have lots of black bears in this area now. But
somebody's passed
out. Well, we're... Hey, guys, I tell you what, we're kind of overtime right now, and probably a good
thing.
Not me. Somebody's falling asleep.
I'm glad we were so exciting, huh?
But what I wanted to do is thank everybody for coming on tonight.
Thank you.
I think there's a lot of things that were exchanged here, a lot of new things. And I want to thank Rocky and Sweet for sharing with us. We're going to have Rocky and Sweet on there from time to time. Some specific areas. As I go through the film that Sweet sent me, I'll be posting some things after they've looked at it. And they've got some really exciting experiences that they do. You'll really see some really neat, some really good stuff.
Did you get a chance to look at it, Marco?
Say again?
Did you have an opportunity to view it?
I went through real quick on some of the areas there. This weekend I have to sit down and actually start editing and going through it.
Well, there's a lot of stuff in there we've talked about, and
yeah.
I think that everybody will...
No, that's what I'm talking about. There's a lot of neat stuff in there,
awesome.
Really good stuff. I think everybody will like it. I mean, there's some really... You guys do a lot of good stuff.
This is from our last year. This is from last year, so...
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Well, everybody, I want to thank you for coming on the show tonight. I want to thank you for sharing and thank all of our listeners for listening in. And everybody out there, you keep Bigfooting and keep the Bigfoot live, and we'll see everybody next week. Take care now. Good night.
Hey, Steve, give me a holler.
Goodbye.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pact that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, mystery, legend, tales, and facts.